Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, and it's a special. Woo-hoo! Today's conversation is with Sadia Azmat. She is a stand-up comic. She also has a successful podcast called No Country for Young Women. I thoroughly enjoyed her company. We discuss a lot about being a Muslim, and it's kind of topical because of what Boris Johnson has been saying recently in the press, though we must point out that we'd booked her ages ago, but she kindly discussed it with us. And I learned a lot.
It was great, wasn't it?
I learned a lot.
Yes.
I learned a lot. And what I learned is we need more people like Sadia on TV as well to educate us, I suppose, and to let us know.
There is very little representation. We were talking about, weren't we? Say she's always, you know, she turns on the telly and it's always old sort of imams and things, so shouting and
yep.
Actually, she's such good fun, such great company.
She's great company, great fun, and she bought us a present.
Oh,
first guest who's bought us a present.
Yeah, a loud present, Tim.
Oh yeah, because I kept eating it. Apologies for that. Anyway, I'm sure you'll thoroughly enjoy this. Here she is, Sadia Azmat.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, write into Dear Lovejoy.
Sadia, welcome to my kitchen. Thank you for joining me today. With all my guests, I give them a present, and I thought long and hard about what to give you. And I thought after watching your stand-up and also listening to your podcast, I think you're quite into strong women. That's one of your things, yeah?
Yes.
Strongest woman I think I've ever met, and we've interviewed her on this podcast, is Meghan Hine.
Okay.
She's the one who goes out and she goes with Bear Grylls. She's a bit of a hero of mine, actually.
Oh, cool.
So I thought I'd buy you this.
Thank you so much. That's really sweet.
And I think you should get her on your podcast.
Oh, wicked. I will do.
I think you should, because I think she's... Once you've read that, it's a bit life-changing, some of the stuff in that. I think you'll... You'll think she'd be a good guest to have. Have you bought us a present as
I
well?
I have indeed. Well, I like to. I'm an amateur baker, and so I thought I'd bring some cake, and then you can try it and tell me what the special ingredient is.
Wow. Okay. Jen, do you mind doing this? Just slice it up. Are you going to tell us what it is, or we just have to guess?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we'll get her to slice that up whilst we're doing that. tell us a bit about yourself then. So, where did it all start for you? You've got your podcast. You're a stand-up comic. How did it all begin?
So a few years ago, I loved to tell jokes, and I was always writing jokes. And so I came across a comedian, Deborah Frances White, and she said, "Oh, why don't you try it?" And I was like, "No, I don't want to try it. And public speaking is really scary and stuff." But then she said, "You know, you'll never meet those people in the room again. So what do you have to lose? If you don't, then like when you're 81, do you want to live with the regret of what you could have done?"
Yeah.
So she really sold it to me as a low risk kind of thing. So I was like, okay, let me try it. And it went really well. So then a few years later, so I've done a few fringe shows, and I've got an agent, and that helps. It really helps. And
so where did you do it first time then?
It was a Funny Women gig in Regent Street or something. So nice room, 70 people in the crowd and all fresh material, and it went all right.
How long was your set?
Five minutes. My knees were shaking, and it's never happened to me before. So kind of like, you know, it felt really good. Like it felt scary, but a good scary.
And did you get laughs?
Yeah. It was.
But have you gone through the thing yet where you've died on stage?
Of course. I'll be lying here to you if I was like, no, I've never died. You learn from dying.
It's, yeah.
Being a Muslim, you can't even joke about it. Because if you're like, oh, I'm either going to kill or die, people are like, ooh. So yeah, I can't. I'm glad you brought it up.
But that's always the thing which amazes me about people who do comedy is all the cakes coming over. is the idea that you die and then you go, hey, I'm going to go back up there and try it again. It's, I just think that that must be the hardest thing to do, to get back up there.
It's a learning process. And to be honest with you, sometimes you go through like a long stint of dying where, and you don't even know you're dying. So I know now from like a couple of years ago, I was dying a lot. And I didn't even realize at the time, I was like, what's wrong with the audience? And yeah, it wasn't them, obviously.
Yeah, well, I suppose. All right, I'm going to try your cake now.
It's yay!
Nice. It's like, as Simon Rimmer would always say on the show, it's nice and moist, and and a good cake is always moist, but it's got an icing on top. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
Oh, that's nice.
Yay!
It's very moist.
Good, good.
But I don't know what the secret ingredient is.
You don't know? I can tell you.
Go on.
So it's courgette and pistachio lime cake.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's got courgette in it.
Yeah.
So that means it's healthy as well.
Well, I won't tell you what else is in it.
Lots of sugar.
Yeah.
And it's so delicious. How often are you baking then at the moment?
I like to, I don't know, not that often. Maybe I should do it more. Like, it depends when I'm really like, feel like a sweet tooth. But sometimes twice a week. Maybe every 2 weeks.
I feel really good. I'm going to do that horrible thing of talking. If everyone watching this on YouTube, hi, this is me eating cake while speaking to you. So before that, before you got into stand-up,
yes,
you were working in a call centre.
Yeah, I was, yeah.
What were you doing there? What's the actual job?
So I went from customer service and sales for like insurance companies.
Oh, somebody at the door. This always happens on a podcast.
I can eat cake while you
Jen, don't look at me. I'm not going. Someone's got to go and answer the door. This is so funny. This
Saved
podcast.
By the bell.
I wonder who that can be. I'm not expecting anyone.
Amazon. What have you been ordering?
Somebody's selling something. Anyway, go on. So you're working in a call centre.
Yeah, I mean, I'd finished uni. I'd done a degree in computing, which my parents really wanted me to do. So I did it, but like I regret that. And then, yeah, it was the first job I kind of landed was in insurance. And I didn't like it very much because I feel like you had to tell people stuff. You had to sell people stuff, basically, and it wasn't cool. Like, but you had to. Like, you were targeted. Otherwise, you'd be taken to a room and something would happen to you bad.
Like what?
I don't know. Some people did have to go into the room and their life was changed forever.
So, you, at the call centre, you were phoning people up and trying to flog them insurance?
Well, they'd phone us for help and then we'd help them and then also try and flog them stuff.
Yeah, I see. I was involved in that industry, in the mortgage industry, and I hated it. I was, to begin with, it was great. I was working in this company. Then I went to one of the big sales ones in London.
Yeah.
And they used to tell us to push certain sorts of mortgages. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it wasn't morally correct because it's one of the biggest things they're going to do, their debts in their life, one of the biggest things they'll ever have to pay off. And I think it should be the right one for them, not the one that makes me the most commission. I hated the job. Absolutely hated it because of that. So it didn't last very long.
Because I was on motor insurance. And so someone called up. This actually happened. Someone called up and said, oh, by the way, the driver, the owner of the car, he's died. I was like, oh, that's a shame. Who's your home insurance with?
No.
You have to. Like, I'm telling you, or you get taken to the room.
How long did you...
I had to leave.
Taken to the room. Yeah. How long did you do this job for?
I was there about 12... No, okay, I'm lying. 18 months. But it only got bad, like, the longer you were in it. So it wasn't, like, terrible the whole time. I think they lulled you into it. And then I was like, this ain't for me. Because I felt like you. I felt morally it wasn't right. Because they trust the brand or they trust you.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of, like, really people by people. And so that's because of me that...
That you're doing,
falling, entrapment.
So how long doing stand-up was it before you said, I can give up the call centre and go into, do this full-time?
5 years.
So quite a long time.
Yeah, right? It's like almost like how long you have to be a doctor for, like training 7 years, but like with none of the other kind of like, people don't look at you and say, wow, you're a comedian, do you know what I mean? That's like... wow, you could save my life kind of thing.
So when you're doing it, then it's just basically 2 or 3 nights a week going out, doing the gigs and that's it.
Yeah, 3 or 4 sometimes. And then I do other things like the podcast and writing and bits and bobs. It's random stuff, like I'm writing a script at the minute, which I've done so many drafts of. And so you kind of like, I don't know, sometimes like tomorrow, BBC Five Live want to have me on to talk about Boris Johnson's comment.
Oh, I'll talk to you about that in a minute.
So it's like you, random stuff just comes up that you kind of started as a stand-up and then you become kind of a bit of a jack of all trades, I suppose, a little bit.
Hey, Jen, can you just move Sadia's mic shield down because it might be covering her face when she's talking.
That's a good thing.
No, it's not. No, just move the shield.
It's like
just
a niqab in a way.
You can't move, that's it. That's just
a
like that.
A sexy niqab. Sure.
So let's talk about... Should we talk about Boris? And let's wait till we talk about Boris.
I don't mind.
Let's park that and do that in a minute. So your material, I've been looking at your material online. A lot of it is about being a Muslim woman.
Yeah.
Has that always been the case? And can you move it on from there? Or is that a problem for you? Are you stuck there?
No. Okay. So I started talking about being in a call center. This was pre ISIS, that it was all fine, it was all call center stuff, and then ISIS came along and then it felt like I had to address the elephant in the room, and kind of like people were curious sometimes about the headdress, and it felt like if I didn't bring it up, then I don't know, people wanted me to bring it up, because whenever I did bring it up, people were like, oh, she talked about it, wow, never thought she'd talk about it. So I haven't put my current stuff online, because obviously when you put it online and people come and see you live, they're like, oh, we've seen this.
Yeah.
But like, I think I am moving away from it. So there is definitely reference to it, but it's more personal stuff. I don't know, if people have never seen me before, then it's not old for them. But for me, it's kind of like I do want to move it along.
Yeah, I suppose it's because it is a big thing, isn't it? There aren't that many comedians who look like you.
Yeah.
You're the only one, aren't you?
I think so.
Pretty much so.
Yeah, I am. Actually, there's a couple of newbies, but, you know, they're starting out, isn't it?
And how is comedy, how is it taken in your community?
You know what? My community is just people who enjoy, like, jokes. So, like, mostly that's, like, not just my community, really. Not strictly my community. How is jokes taken? I think they're trying to get there, but it's, like, they don't come to pubs. That's a lot of where I perform and stuff like that. So there's some diehard fans who will turn up at the Fringe who like really want to support acts like Asian acts and stuff. But I don't know. I think they need to just enjoy comedy more. Mm. You know,
it's really hard when I was sitting down writing questions for this, and I've just done it. There, the thing that I didn't want to do
is
some of the way I word things and some of the way people say things is just construed as racist immediately.
Oh, is it?
Well, so the idea that I said your community
makes
it feel like I'm going, you. I imagine your community is, well, I know it is because you do a podcast with Monty. It's a mixture of many different people and everything. But I was sort of saying about the Muslim community as in, that it's hard because it seems to me that a lot of the Muslim subjects that now seem to be out of bounds. It's not worth going there. Do you feel that being a Muslim, that people go, oh, God, I can't be bothered to talk about it in case it gets construed the wrong way?
I think I'm quite lucky because I'm like, I feel so many disability. I mean, that's bad. Shall I say it? Can I? I feel so many minority kind of boxes. So I can get away with a lot more. Like, I don't think I get the same flack that female comedians might get because the scarf kind of takes away any gender. And then people are just like, oh shit, did she say that? But they kind of don't know sometimes how to take me. And so in terms of my community, I think it's just interesting when I perform strictly just to Muslim audiences, because there's always like people, it's kind of divided and some people really get it. But then I have to kind of like, I've been warned by the promoters beforehand that, you know, certain things might not be appreciated, or like if I talk about sex or maybe homosexuality, or if I talk about certain things, it will rub people up the wrong way. And as you know, with comedy, you don't really want to censor yourself going in there with all these rules about what you can and can't say. It's not the best environment for comedy.
Yeah, see, I suppose I'm blinkered to it all. I don't know how much comedy there is for you to perform to Muslim communities and how much they want to see it. I mean, I've been listening to your podcast and watching some of the stuff. You're quite risky, aren't you? I mean,
I'd like to be more risky. That was the BBC, so, you know.
But your podcast is very, you know, it's out there.
We were lucky, you know. We were the first BBC podcast to be able to say motherfucker. That's a great accolade. I will take that to the grave. Do you know what I mean? And I just think it was nice because I think they know that we're not a Radio 4 kind of piece. And we've managed to find an audience, which has been really good. So it's like 50% in the UK, 50% global. So it's that kind of thrown me. Like, we've had comments from Zambia, like people in Zambia saying, "Hey, my 7 girlfriends love this show and stuff."
7 girlfriends.
Yeah. So, and we went back. Was like, "Are they your real girlfriends or your friends?" But we knew what he meant. But it's cool to have like an eclectic kind of audience. And so many white people are also very on board with it as well. Like people who are typical Radio 4 listeners as well, they want a piece as well. Do you know what I mean? They ain't going to be ignored, which I love. I love that there's audiences who are kind of like...
Remind us what it's called.
It's called No Country for Young Women.
And what is the concept of it then? What would you say it was?
Well, I wanted to call it Race Whores because we talk about race a lot and we talk about sex a lot. So Race Whores is kind of...
So it's you, by the way, it's you and Monty who you met in the call centre.
Yeah, so Monty Onanuga, she's a good friend of mine. And we kind of have these type of chats about our lives and we kind of encourage each other and give each other advice and support. And in doing the podcast, we kind of realised that there's so many people that kind of relate to our experiences, which we thought we were kind of like, maybe it was just us, but like, I don't know, just a feeling of, okay, so where it really stemmed from is that we speak British, we don't look British, but we speak British. We were kind of born or raised here. Monty was raised, like, she came really young, like 3 years old. But to look at us...
Where's she from then?
Nigeria.
Right.
So to look at us, we don't look British, but we feel British, and we definitely don't feel Indian in my case or Nigerian in her case, although she's very proud Nigerian. So it's kind of like finding a belonging in a way, like where do we fit in, or can we claim being British? Like, and I think I am more than Indian anyway, but is it just by default? Or, and there's all these different people, like our listeners as well, who kind of like, it doesn't just have to be race. You could have migrated somewhere and then you kind of miss your motherland, but you're embracing where you are. So it's kind of like, where do you call home?
What do you feel then? Or are you British? What do you
feel?
I'm
definitely East London. I've got the accent, isn't it? I'm definitely East London. So, you know, I'm not angry with England. I don't know. I think, should I be? I'm not, you know, I love Britain as much as British people can be enthusiastic about anything, really. So, you know what I mean? It's all right, isn't it? It's all right.
And your subjects you cover on it are quite... I mean, I'm going to say something here which just might be construed the wrong way, but you start talking about sex in it a lot. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't associate being a Muslim woman.
There's a lot of us.
but we're talking openly about sex.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, this is an interesting, you know, concept here. So was that easy to do on a podcast for you?
That's a good question. I want to lie and say, yeah, it was easy. I don't know, sometimes it was easy, but to be honest, I've been having a dry spell, so there ain't been really much to talk about, but, you know, but yeah, no, it's fine, and it's, I think it's important, because I think there's so many people who can relate to it, or people maybe who don't feel that there's Muslim people who have those experiences, and like, I don't know, what I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of Muslim teenagers, or a little bit older than teenagers, adults who are having sex pre-marriage, and you know, it's normal, but it doesn't feel normal, so talking about it is good.
Yeah, so as you're growing up in a country like Britain and you're from a Muslim background and your parents are probably quite strict, I'm just doing this, not you, I'm just saying this as a young Muslim woman or man, and your parents are quite strict, and then you're looking around at other people in London, in East London, going at it, pubs, drinking, drugs, sex and everything. There must be a bit where you're growing up going, wow, which way do I go here?
Yeah, I think it depends on whatever stance your parents have, you want to pick the opposite.
So there's still the rebelling against the parents.
Yeah, for me it was. Like, my parents were always like, do what you want. Be very English, you know, be Gora, as they would like to say. Do you know what I mean?
What does that mean?
Gora is white.
Oh, right.
So they were like, be white. Like, you know, we love you more. You know, they love white people. My parents love white people. So I was kind of like, I'm going to wear a headscarf, okay? I'm going to be me. And I don't know. It was weird.
So you went against what they were trying to get you to do.
Yeah, well, my dad was like, one time I was really young, 18 or something, and we went shopping and there was a mini skirt. It's like, Sadia, wear this. And I was like, why are you telling me? It wasn't that mini. It was like above the knee. But mini in my eyes at that time for my dad to recommend. So I was kind of like, I don't know. It was nice for them to be accepting. But I don't know why. I just felt like whatever they're saying, I want to do the other thing.
Right. What do your parents think of your podcast?
I haven't told them. So your guess is as good as mine.
Get them to listen to the one with the porn star.
I loved her. I love her. Lena Bembe. She...
Well, haven't you told them, by the way, before we go into Lena?
Okay, so basically, I never really told them I was doing comedy. So I was always like in my day job, and then I never told them when I flipped over, because I don't need their approval. And I think, you know, we all know Asian parents are very much like, do accountancy or do medicine or do these things. And like, I didn't want them, like, I worked really hard to kind of get into comedy. I didn't want it to be about them or their wishes. I wanted it to be my baby. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I've been in the newspapers and stuff. I felt like putting it out there, and they're just, you know, we're not, I don't know, not as close as we used to be, perhaps.
So do they have they seen your stand up? Have they seen it?
No.
Let's talk. Would you like them to see it?
I don't care.
Right.
Is the honest answer. But I don't mind now. I think before I would be a bit more like, oh, I don't want them to see it. But like, you know, I wouldn't mind. I'd be open to them seeing it.
Right.
Maybe we could do that in another show.
Yeah, good idea. let's talk about porn stars then.
Yeah.
You're talking about how you integrate into Britain, and then you decide to get a porn star on your podcast.
That was my idea. I'm going to take full props for that. That was like...
I listened to a few of them, and I got to that one. I was like, wow, this is quite a fascinating subject to cover. Why did you choose to do a porn star?
We wanted to talk to a porn star from like a kind of minority background, just to see what the experience for her might have been like, because most of the porn I've ever watched has been white people. And Monty also talked about, like, you know, sometimes maybe minority races being fetishized a little bit. So we just wanted to get her insight, really. But it wasn't what I thought it would be. Like, I thought it was going to be all about, you know, sperm and, I don't know, different things or fun things, like positions that she's learning. It was really profoundly like art
for her.
It was really deep. So
yeah.
I grew in that episode, but I feel like I want a more, you know, regular porn performer to come along. And
do you think Monty has a more exciting sex life than you?
She has a sex life. Yeah, probably. Yeah,
she does.
I can tell you.
I listen to the podcast. She kind of does quite a few things, doesn't she?
Yeah.
When you're writing your comedy, then, so who are you writing for? Who's your audience you're writing for?
I should be writing for an audience, but I'm not just writing for myself. I'm just writing the truth. So anybody who really wants to hear an honest perspective, really.
Yeah.
Is that a cop out?
No, it's not at all.
Okay.
Because I was thinking, you're just saying you're going on Five Live. You can't help it. You suddenly become a spokesman, don't you, for being a Muslim woman?
Yeah, I've avoided it though. Like, Sky tried to get me on a bit, and I just like was like,
oh, but
I'm busy.
Saw you on This Week.
Yeah.
You did some stuff on that. Why?
This week.
Was that
the BBC One thing? Oh, God. Yeah, Andrew Neil.
Yeah.
He was mean.
I didn't see the interview. I only saw your VT.
I wanted to do the Kanye West. Andrew Neil hates Muslims. I wanted to do that, but it was too...
What did he say? What did he say in the interview? Did he not?
It was like, I don't know. It wasn't... I feel like I was to blame for Muslim women who can't read. I feel like I was there to be every Muslim. But the thing is, I hadn't been prepped for that. Like, I thought it was like David Letterman. So it was my bad as well. But like, the producers were all lovely and like, it'll be fine. Like, talk from your experiences. Don't do any research. And then he was like, what's the stats on Muslim women who can't read? And I was like,
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's kind of like got really political really quickly.
Yeah, which is interesting because suddenly you're supposed to be an expert on everything.
I was told not to do any prep. I just feel like I should have taken my library card and shown him it. Like, that would have been a kind of like, I would have won if I'd done that.
So how strong is your faith?
Ooh. How long is a piece of string? I think it's like, I don't want to not be Muslim. Is that like, so, you know, I really believe in Allah. I really believe in God. But like, and I don't drink. That's like the
what does it of what faith. Does it I don't have any faith. Okay. I didn't have any religion growing up. I've not been Christian or anything. What does it feel like to have faith? I've had a few religious people on. I've asked the same questions, so you can tell me what it feels like.
Okay, I think it's different for everybody, but I don't think that everybody gets that. And I think there's a lot of anger when there are people, I'm not saying from you, but there are people who are atheists who are very angry about belief, which is weird, because it's like, because I don't know, I just, if it's difficult because I don't have to like kind of like agree with them, they don't have to agree with me, and that should be okay, right?
100%. Yeah,
yeah. So
I don't get religion. I didn't, and then I suddenly started thinking about it a lot, and I thought actually it might be quite nice to belong to something.
And you shouldn't force it. My friend doesn't believe either, but she wants to, but she doesn't, and that's fine.
And I also think it must be quite comforting. Some form of prayer is a form of meditation.
It's very healing.
And I think we are replacing religion with
mindfulness.
Yeah, mindfulness, basically. Yeah, like, so everyone gets up in the morning and goes 20 minutes worth of, you know, sitting meditation. It's the same as doing prayers or, you know, and all these things. And we're just replacing it because I think as humans we need that sort of discipline to do some stuff where we lose ourselves a bit. So
being in touch with yourself spiritually, especially in this social media kind of led world.
Yeah.
So the only question I have for you as an atheist, if that's okay, is like, if you're in trouble, like if you're falling off a cliff, like obviously, would you say, oh my God, like who do you call out to?
Yeah, of course I would. Yeah.
Anyone. That's all I wanted to.
I'll have any of you. Whoever you are, I'll take you. Whatever religion, I'll take you now.
That's all I wanted to know.
Yeah, but I
you're normal, that means.
Yeah, no, of course you do. God help me. Yeah. No, yeah, that's it. But I suppose that's what you do. That's the normal thing to do. But it's weird not having any faith like me, because you just don't have any.
It free though? It must be freeing.
Yeah, that's the only thing I think is that I don't get involved in. I don't have any laws to control myself, but then I still think I have the moral backbone that everybody else has. Not everybody else.
But
yeah.
Like, so I think it must be like, it must be a lot of work or pressure on you to be a good person, because you're not doing it for God.
Well, no, there's no pressure. I think most people are good people, don't you think?
That seems like, I'm sorry, it just seems a little bit optimistic, which is not bad.
I think we all act on our instincts.
Yeah.
I think that's actually, we could get on to Boris Johnson in a minute and talk about that. But I think that's a fear thing with a lot of people. Let's talk about that. What do you think of Boris Johnson saying those ridiculous comments?
I mean, I'm not surprised, first of all, but I think it's divisive, and like being angry is like the easiest thing. So I'm not going to let Boris Johnson push my buttons. I think Muslim women, you know, bear the brunt of a lot of kind of clumsy phrases or clumsy attitudes and statements. So like, this is just one of very many. And I think this is a bit like, I don't know much about politics, but I think in terms of, to be able to call someone a robber, it takes one to know one, and like the Tories are robbing us. So it's kind of like, well, you should know, I probably paid for his haircut, which is really bad. So I should do better and he should do better.
It's always intrigued me, the hair thing with Boris. And I know people like it, and I don't get why they like it. It's like, it's a messy haircut. It doesn't.
People like it.
Well, they do. People seem to embrace it and say it's a wonderful thing that he's got this messy hair. And I'm always thinking, to me, you know, I was always told as a kid, when you go for interviews, make sure you have shiny shoes and do your hair and make yourself look clean. Yeah. It's like, he's turning up representing the country and he can't even do his hair. And it always frustrates me that. I'm thinking, someone tell him to comb his hair. But I think he does it on purpose, doesn't he? It's just part of his clown image. the sort of letterbox thing, though, and the bank robber, it's why do you think he's using that language, though?
I think he's using it because he can. But for me, it feels really old. Like, if you're going to have racial epithets, at least make it modern or something. But this very you know, juvenile, very, very kind of like maybe 10, 15 years ago.
So he's a really bright guy, right?
Yeah.
Let's not question that. He's very smart. He knows his stuff. Mm. And he's used, as you said, juvenile, childish language. And he's used it for a purpose.
Yeah.
We cannot deny, because it wasn't in an interview like you're doing with me here where we've both said something which we regret. He's actually written it down. So he knows what he's writing. He's writing juvenile. So he's doing it for a purpose.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Do you think he's doing it because he wants to do the Trump thing? He says the shock thing, tries to get people debating it. Theresa May's had to come out today and say, I don't like his language and all that. So she's gone against him. He's got a lot of fans. Do you think that's what he's trying to do? He's trying to position himself by using that sort of language.
Is it that no publicity is bad publicity? Because, you know, yesterday or before he said it, nobody was talking about him, and it's a easy way to get his name, like hashtag or, you know, trending, if you want to call it that. But it's just, I don't know, it's difficult to say what his motivation was. I wouldn't, there are similarities with the Trump approach, but I just think even, you know, when ISIS was coming out and he was saying that, you know, people are radicalized by porn, he seems to be able to push certain pressure points at certain times. And for me, the frustration isn't exactly just what he said, but it's like just bringing Muslims back into the storm. Just when things are settling, then it's just bringing us back into this kind of politicized area. And so it's always controlled by you know, outside forces and not Muslims' views or actions.
Do you find that hard then? Do you find you're under siege constantly?
Not constantly, but yes, inconsistently or out of our control. So like I said with comedy, when ISIS were out, my audiences were scared of me. Like they were like, don't want to not laugh in case she blows us up, but don't want to laugh and offend her.
I should be laughing at that. No, don't let me laugh at that.
No, I shouldn't laugh at that. Yeah, but you should laugh. Yeah. And it's like, I'm a comedian. Like, I want you to laugh. But it's like, so they were scared, and then that scared me, and it was like triggering for everybody and uncomfortable. And then Trump came along and he was Mr. Bad Guy. So it was like, oh, we can like Muslims because he's the worst guy. And so then he died down a little bit because he's like upsetting mothers and children and like, you know, that situation's going on. So then now Boris is coming. So it's always Muslims somehow just, you know, being used in the, by, I would say, as a political football, you know, and the tide is always just as it's settling, it gets bad again.
Yeah.
It's not a nice way to kind of like to be, I suppose. I don't want to moan about it. It's just awkward.
Why do they wear that they? That's again another word I wish I hadn't used. But why do Muslim women wear some of them wear the burqa?
Okay, you mean the face one?
I don't know. Sorry, apologies.
That's okay, don't worry.
I'm talking about the one which Boris Johnson's talking about.
So that's called a niqab. But I mean, it can be used interchangeably with a burqa,
right,
which is
okay.
The robe as well.
Okay.
So basically, there's a hadith from the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And he said that women should cover everything but this and this. So there's different interpretations. So some people think...
Apart from this and this, what's that mean?
Hands.
Yeah. Oh, hands.
And some people interpret it as the face can be like... They should be covered except the hands and the face. And some people interpret it as the hands and the eyes.
Right.
So the people who are wearing it, they've obviously taken the interpretation to be that what he wanted is for women to cover everything but the hands and the eyes. But it's like... It's just a personal choice. I've met women who've covered with that, with niqab, sorry. And they are basically, you know, their faith is at that level where they're comfortable in you know, expressing themselves that way. There must be positives. They don't have to wear makeup, you know. They don't have to, you know, I don't know, but there must be good points of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's up to them. I wouldn't.
Why wouldn't you?
Because, you know, I think I'm enough on stage for the audiences as it is, but I just think
You couldn't do comedy, could you?
No, probably.
Because you need to. I might regret saying that. Facial expressions.
It's an exchange of energy,
yeah.
And you're blocking quite a lot of that.
Yeah.
No disrespect to the women who wear it, but it's just I wouldn't want to wear it because I like to be able to. I think if I'm really honest, I think that this scarf is alienating enough as it is.
Do you think it is?
Yes.
Do you?
Can be.
I think because I live in London.
Yeah.
I spend the whole of my day on the tube and doing all that sort of stuff.
It's like the tide. If we were the bad guys at the minute, it'd be more so. We're not the bad guys because Boris Johnson just said something, so we're the victims.
Mm.
But it's like there's all these different kind of elements and forces going on that we can't control. So people aren't judging me based on me. Because I wear the scarf, they're judging me on what's going on with Islam in the news as well. And so that's a hard thing to kind of carry around with you sometimes.
It's quite extreme though, isn't it, to cover the whole of your face, just to have your eyes. And you know, we've all got to be honest here. The first time I saw someone in real life dress up, I was like, wow. Because it is quite a shocking, not shocking, oh God.
I know what you mean.
It's such an unusual thing to see, someone walking down the road like that.
Dare I say radical.
Yeah, dare you say that. And then, so I suppose that is kind of... It doesn't fit in the comfort zone of many people. And I was saying this, I can't remember if I was saying this to on my podcast not so long ago. I feel a lot of racism and a lot of intolerance is due to fear and not understanding. So, if I sat down with someone and they said, I wear this because it's from the Quran and all this sort of stuff, thinking, I can understand now, but we're told we're force-fed with it's because they're not allowed to be seen by other men and things.
Oh no, it's like I have so many stories of women who wear the niqab and their husbands don't want them to cover. Their husbands don't even want them to wear the headscarf. Like, their husbands want them to look attractive, to show that they're like, you know, I'm with this.
Right.
But like, it's a woman's choice. That's definitely what I've come across. I'm not trying to dispute that there might be some kind of few relationships where the guys kind of like really enforce certain
restrictions. So why is that? Because it's pushed in the media constantly that it's not the woman's choice. Why is that being forced upon us then? Why do you think that is the message coming across to us?
I think it's because, and this might be like convenient because like I'm an Asian woman who wants to have a voice, but I think it's because we don't have a voice and people always speak for us. So you probably don't get to hear firsthand, like you just said, why that person's wearing the niqab. You don't get to hear it. And
so your role is getting bigger as we speak, because you are a voice and you're doing it with comedy as well. Yeah, you're an important voice then.
Thank you. I like to think so. Not always. Not after I've had a drink.
But you're going to be made into more of an important voice, though.
I mean, I think it's just good because I'm kind of different. I'm not representative of any particular view. I'm not very, what would you say? I'm not on either end of the spectrum.
How important is comedy then for this type of thing? How
I think
important?
It's so important because it disarms is, people, yeah. And people don't, you're not preaching to them, because if it's either going to be white people with a lot of white guilt in a seminar being, yeah, we hate ourselves and we love you and you're great and we don't want that. We don't, like, your white guilt isn't productive.
Right.
But we also don't want, like, the opposite end of that either. So with comedy, it's relaxing and then people can just be like, ah, she said some fucked up shit. And, you know, but hey, I didn't think of some of these things could come out of her mouth. And, you know, maybe they're just like us.
What you need is comedy to question things. That's what you need. And by doing it through comedy rather than protest, and I'm not saying anything wrong with protest, by the way, but protest and always it's radical statements and stuff like that, that always gets a bit, you know, after a while you just part that to one side. Then comedy comes along.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting way of getting views across and also helping get ideas across as well.
Yeah. It's kind of like a connection with the audience as well. And I think it's nice to be able to make people laugh. Like, people like to make people, you know, happy with cooking. I love to make people laugh because it's good for you, right?
Is the Muslim religion progressive at all? Do you think it's getting progressive?
I think, if this is controversial, it depends on who is involved in its progression. Is that a cop out? I think that's a cop out. But like,
no, it's not, because I had Reverend Richard Coles on here, and I said I hated the Church of England because when I grew up, it was the gay community against the Church of England, and I took the gay community side, so I was on their side. Reverend Richard Coles is gay, and I said, how does it work? You've been gay in that religion, and it's kind of the religion's kind of caught up to embrace the gay community, and so I can relook at it again. But that's how I felt about it. And so, you know, it is certain sets of people move it on. I suppose, is that what's happening?
I would say, if it is being moved on, it's like by the minority, and certain attitudes could be done with moving on a little bit faster. So, like, I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of wounds, shall we say, from some of the remnants of kind of like ISIS and terrorism and like feeling like we should be blamed for something we haven't done. So I think once those hopefully wounds can heal, then we can move on. But I think there's still a lot of, from what I understand in the community, there's still a lot of like, I don't know, just I suppose upset because of like feeling villainified. Or
yeah, no, I understand what you're saying here. Is there is it, how it's
you want to shake him?
Yeah, I suppose it's interesting. This is, I'm learning a lot, and but it's true, because I'm actually getting to speak to somebody who's actually telling me the way it is, rather than the way I'm listening to it all the time on the media. So it's I'm finding this fascinating conversation. How is feminism? Because you're obviously a feminist, you talk about it on your podcast. How does that relate with being a Muslim woman?
So I know I said it in the podcast, but I have problems. But that's not a testimony, right? I think I am, is in the things that I do, like a guy doesn't pay my bills, and like I think women are good and equal to men. But like in terms of like the feminists out there, I don't identify with the feminists out there, if that makes sense. But in terms of Islam and feminism, I mean, I don't know where this, like, the ideas that you've said. I think people use religion as an excuse. So, like, there are men who will tell women it's their place to do X, Y, Z because of religion, but they're misusing religion because Islam isn't like that at all. And they just, I think it kind of says that we're, you know, strength, we're strong in different ways. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but you know, I think Islam basically says that, you know, you should value women, and like, you know, women are really important on the Day of Judgment. Like, women are going to be like the ones that stand up first in terms of answering for our actions and stuff like that. So there isn't sexism for me from religion.
Getting rid of the religious side of it. Let's talk about men and women here. Just so yes. You said men and women are strong in different ways.
Yeah.
I see. This is something that I sort of, when I started this podcast, I believed in pure equality, and I've discussed this with June Sapong, Harriet Harman, lots of people. I'm starting to wonder whether I'm right there. Whether what was it Fina said the other day? It should be equal opportunities. We're not equal, but it should be equal opportunities.
Yeah.
Am I getting close? I don't know. See, but I feel like I'm a man and a woman's a woman, and we're a little bit different. What do you think about it?
I think that we should be allowed to feel how we feel, rather than like this kind of narrative that makes you feel like you should believe that. So maybe that's what's made you think that that's the right thing, that we're all equal. But I don't think, I find equality to be an idealism rather than like a reality that I've ever seen. So not just in gender, but in any walk of life. I've never seen equality in any walk of life personified. So I don't think it's wrong. I don't think either one is wrong, but I personally think that women and men are really good and like can be at different things, and we're not the same. We're not the same.
No. Yeah, it's a minefield. Because working in broadcasts, I do, and you know, entertainment, and I have to sort of be very careful what I do and say all the time, and we're bombarded with these messages at the moment. You know, everyone's equal, and equal opportunity. Yeah, we are, but I don't know. I'm worried about it, because I think a lot of the world are happy having gender roles.
Yeah,
and yet we're going and sort of in the media industry, we're saying, no, everybody's equal. All my bosses are women, by the way, and I'm fine with that. You know, but there are differences between us. I'm a man filled with testosterone, and you're a woman filled with estrogen. We're slightly different in our chemical makeup. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I worry about it, and I'm worried about having this conversation with you now. And wish I hadn't started it, but you know, we're at that place with all these conversations.
My only thing is that I'd love to have equal pay. That's the only thing.
Equal pay is. Yeah, but equal pay in what respect? Because I think people get confused with equal pay. With I think when you look at the BBC and media, God, that's a disgrace. Because the BBC should be paying everybody equally.
Mm-hmm.
But do you mean equal pay as in everyone should have the equal jobs? Or equal pay as in equal
the
money
roles,
for
yeah.
equal roles in the companies and everything?
Yeah, that's all I mean.
Yeah.
But I haven't done
equal opportunities.
Yeah, I'm for equal opportunities. I don't think that you should be discriminated because of You know, I think if a woman wants to do construction and stuff, good. And I just, I think...
So do
thing,
I, yeah.
Another thing...
I tell you what, when you read Megan Hines' book, you promise me you'll read that book.
Yeah, I will.
You'll love her. Go through it. This woman is amazing. She made me feel so insignificant as a human.
Yeah.
She's out there doing it all the time. I'm like, wow, this woman's brilliant. She's just, she's an incredible woman.
Yeah. I think that's what's difficult sometimes is like, you know, when the media kind of, the way it dresses things up. So it'll be like, oh, this is the first Muslim person to do this, or this is the first woman to do this. But we've been doing it for a long time, but it kind of dresses it up to make you think it's not the normal, it's an exception.
Yeah.
So that's a bit patronizing sometimes as well.
How'd you go about writing comedy then? How hard is it? Do you just sit there with a blank piece of paper and go, or does it come to you all the way through the days?
Stream of consciousness. So, you know, sometimes it will just, jokes will be flying out your mouth. And I think conversations like on the podcast can really help. And sometimes it's people watching. So people should be careful around me. You know, people just don't know how funny they are. And it's really like everyday things that are quite hilarious. But if they're so into it, they won't like notice.
Mm.
So it's like this woman, like, you know, talking on the phone at Starbucks and like her mannerisms, her exasperations. It's all funny. So day-to-day life. And
did you always want to do this then? I mean, when was it you thought, I can be funny, I can be a stand-up?
So I always wanted to, well, I wanted to be an actress actually, but then my mum was like, you can't be an actress, it's against Islam. So like, then I had to stop, you know, those dreams. And then, you know, it kind of found me a little bit because I'm a bit weird. We are weird comedians, I think you might, yeah, you might realize. So, I don't know, it was nice to be able to kind of feel like that could go to you somewhere, because obviously you have to kind of squash that down in your day job. So you can kind of like celebrate who you are and enjoy what you do.
Is I shouldn't be laughing, but is acting against Islam?
No, I don't think it is. I think, I don't know.
What does that mean?
You shouldn't be. I don't know. I was really young, so too young to question it. So young that I needed my mum to be able to tell me what I couldn't do. And obviously, I don't think it is, but I think this might come back to your point about how progressive is Islam. Like, I don't think I'm going to go to hell for being an extra in a movie or something. So, you know, I don't think so.
But, see, this is the thing where you talked about earlier about feeling free. I don't have any rules or laws. I don't have any
That's
days.
That's what I think being an atheist must be. Sometimes it does cross my mind, like, those people are living life.
Have you ever doubted it and thought, oh God, I could just give all this up and just get on and just...
I believe in God though. Do you know what I
mean? What do you actually believe? Tell me what you believe.
I believe that God made us and that we're here for a reason. Right. I don't know what the reason is. It would be good if I knew.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's kind of, things are a test and that you should be good and like try and be a better person. If I didn't have that framework, I don't think, like you, I would be that bothered about being such a moral person, to be honest with you. It's really bad.
Yeah, you would.
No,
you
I'd
would.
Be drinking and I'd be dead.
All right, okay. Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I do drink. Yeah, I do
no,
drink.
No, I would be dead. Like.
But as Mark tells you, I'm a rubbish drinker. He'll tell you. 3 pints is my max. So what do you actually believe, though? Do you believe that if you do the... pray?
Yes.
How many times?
5 times a day, but not today. Not as regularly as I should, I'll be honest. But I want to improve.
But what if you don't? What happens?
I just think, like, I think I will get to a point where I do it more regularly. I think that's something that people struggle with and don't talk about. But there are people who are really good at it. I don't know why. I think I'm just lazy.
But what do you think happens if you don't?
Well, it's a kind of not a good thing, like, in your faith. You will be questioned. So basically what we believe is, this is going to sound a bit much, but that there's 3 lives, okay? So there's this life, then mm-hmm. when you're buried, there's a life there, a very brief one, I think. And then, obviously, after the world ends, which sounds like a movie, then you're kind of like, everybody's going to be, you know, there, like a festival. And, you know, and then you're kind of like, I guess you're called to question on your deeds.
And
then obviously if you're good, then you get through the good door, and if you're bad, there's a bad door waiting for you, kind of like working in insurance.
You get taken into the
room. Yeah. I don't want to go to any rooms.
Taken into that room. I always have a question which I always ask at the end of the thing: is there an afterlife? I've just started doing it in the recent podcast. And
do you think there is?
No.
Okay. You were very quick.
No, I just... I can't see it. So I mean, that's the problem with not having a faith, is I don't have anything to go on apart from the fact that I'm going to be food for worms or something. I won't even do that because I'll be cremated.
Have you read some of the religious texts at all? Have they moved you or moved you? That's a bit maybe
no,
too much.
I'm waiting for them to come to me.
Yeah.
I've always been told if I open my heart, one of them will come in, but they haven't.
Oh, who told you that?
My religious friends.
But listen, that's the same thing that Monty gets frustrated with me about, because I'm like, if I'm meant to be with someone, a guy's going to come to me. But she's like, well, if you want to work in comedy, you've worked hard at it. You've not waited for it to come to you, have you? So why would you wait for a boyfriend to come to you? So you're like me in that.
So that's how you believe a man will come to you?
Yeah, well,
waiting.
Just like, I'm not going to go looking or hunting, because like it hasn't worked in the past, let's be honest. That's a whole other podcast.
Somebody told me once it's like a job, and I thought this is interesting. Finding a partner is like a job. You've got to, you know, you've got to work out all your assets, what your package is to sell yourself, make yourself there, and then you've got to think, what do I want? And you know, what job do I want? Which man or woman do I want? Which partner do I want? And then you've got to think, where are they going to be? Now you've got to hang out at those places where they're going to be. You've got to do it. And it's like a job. You've got to go for it and work really hard. And they said, you work really hard at your job. You should work really hard at finding a partner. And then when you find a partner, you then should work as hard to keep them as you do in your work and whatever, apparently. But
I'm waiting
for
him to come to
me. I've got three kids and I'm single. So, so don't look at me. I'm the world disaster when it comes to all that sort of stuff. So you do it all for the afterlife. So everything happens for...
It feels like, you know, that's a big motivation. But I think you kind of like, it's the spirit of it, not just what you can get out of it as well. So being a good person is a reward in itself. So kind of like striving for better and self-improvement and stuff like that. So I think just perfecting your character is really important.
And by wearing clothes, which represents your religion, do you think that is... people coming together to say I belong to something, or does it actually have connotations in the religion?
Personally, I think it's different for everybody, and when I started wearing it, it wasn't that common, and if I had a choice now, I probably wouldn't, but like I've started, so I'll finish, if that makes sense. But it's not that fun, but then taking it off would be like, some naysayers would be like, we were right. So you don't want them to be right either. So it's now, my head is now kind of like, you know, a political football. And so it's not what it used to be for me, basically. I used to really enjoy it and it was just fun. It wasn't religious. It wasn't like, that sounds really bad, but it was just like, I think it was what you said. It felt like I was just a part of a you know, community, or this is like how I identified. But now it's taken on so many different connotations that are not in my control, so it's taken a lot of the fun out of it for me.
I always say to people, when one of the new questions on the podcast is, when you grow up, did you define yourself as anything? Obviously you define yourself as a Muslim. Was there ever a time you wanted to be something else, like a brossette or something, or a take that girl or something like that? Was there any of those type of things that came into your life, into your...
What do you mean, like a fan?
Yeah, like, was there anything that you thought, oh, I want to be part of this?
I love Amy Winehouse, and I never saw her live. That would have been good. But in terms of defining myself, no. Maybe, but not just because it's always been Muslim. I just think I'm really weird.
Your cake, by the way, is really good. I've just gone back for more. It's really good.
I'm not starting. It will go over my lipstick and stuff.
I know. It's really good. I'm really enjoying this. And it's so good. I forgot what I was...
It's Jen's recommendation.
Jen, yeah. That's really good, that cake, right? Yeah.
Aww.
So in your stand-up, you'd say that Asians don't go on holiday. Is this is this true, or is that just part of your routine?
I really don't think we have fun. Like... You know, and I have had a few people off Radio 4 who's like, I've gone on this holiday. I bet it was all business trips. Do you know what I mean? So I think they try and have fun, but it's like hard to switch off. I don't know why. When I was growing up, it always felt like the struggle and the grind for Asians had to be real, like real, real. And you couldn't just like have fun or chill out. Like everything had to be for something and work towards your goals. And you have to have that arranged marriage. You have to pass your exams, probably not in that order, but sometimes. And then, you know, sensible stuff.
Is that also what we see on television, every time we see a Muslim person on TV, they're pretty serious and they're discussing faith and stuff, and you know, having to talk about Boris Johnson, what he's just said, or something else. We don't get to see a lot of Muslims come on and have a laugh.
Yeah, you get to hear us talking about domestic abuse and, like, you know, the fun
it's
stuff.
It's true, though, isn't it? When I was growing up in Watford, this guy, he was a friend of mine, he was an actor, a black guy, and he was going to me, I can't stand it. Every time you turn on the TV and look at black guys, they're always cliche.
It's true.
And he goes, why are they going to put black people on who don't look like
the token guy, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose that must be the same, how you must feel when you look at Muslims come on TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to undermine sometimes, you know, the things that they're trying to, the messages they're trying to impart, but it's all very one-dimensional, isn't it? And it's not as representative, because I think we are changing, but the changes aren't coming through. You wouldn't know that we're changing, basically, because, like, I think some Muslims are starting to have fun, but it's like, you wouldn't know, kind of thing, so... I don't know. I don't think it's all as bad as, like, I don't think being Muslim is as exciting as the media presents it to be. Like, we're very average, we're very normal people. We might not go on as many holidays, like, every year, but I think we're just regular people, and it's hard when you're having to always represent. I think that's the one thing, like, I wish that I could have from white people is that, like, you guys don't have to feel like anything you do is representative of your whole, anybody who looks like you, do you know what I mean? But for me, I feel like you have to, that's where the carefulness sometimes has to come in a little bit, which is taking the fun out of stuff, isn't it? But it's like, you know, you just have to kind of like always represent, and that's like, you want a day off.
When you're on your podcast, you're talking about having sex with Magic Mike, as you were.
They're coming to tour in November.
Who are?
There's a Magic Mike XXL tour.
What is
coming
that?
To the West
isn't
End.
Isn't Magic Mike an actor, though?
No, what it is.
Is it what?
It's a movie.
Yeah, but isn't Magic Mike the main bloke in the... I don't know, I've not... Bizarrely, I didn't bother watching the movie for some bizarre reason. It just didn't appeal to me. I don't know why. Mark says it's good. Hold on. Right, okay. Tell me the concept of Magic Mike then.
Like you work out, Tim. You might have been able to admire some of their, you know, moves.
Tell me who Magic Mike was then. What is he? I thought it was a man, Tatum O'Neill, isn't it?
Shannon Tatum.
Who's Tatum O'Neill?
Oh my God. You're so funny. Okay, basically.
Yeah, that was a joke, everyone. Really not, no.
Channing Tatum is basically this guy who needs to earn money, and comes across these like guys who are stripping, and then just joins in. And then the whole film is a really light film about, there's like a little bit of story that you don't need to know, and then there's dances, and then a little bit of story you don't need to know, and dances. That's all it is.
So who's
it's like porn?
So who's
but soft porn?
Who's Magic Mike then?
I don't know. I just liked Matthew McConaughey, so I wasn't that bothered about Channing Tatum.
He's in it?
Yes.
Hold on, but which one's Magic Mike? Who is Magic Mike?
Is it, yeah, Channing Tatum.
Oh, so when you're discussing wanting to sex Magic Mike, you were talking about any of them?
Yes, but not the one with the long penis, because there's a...
Hold on, you see their penises?
No, the Greek you are, yeah, we did actually. It was like a shade. It was like the back of it. Anyway, yeah, you could see it basically. Sorry. But yeah, anyway, that one, I don't know about him, because he was talking about having problems with women. I didn't realise people with long penises had such a hard time, like literally a hard time.
With long penises? Does that mean large? Or
Yes, they're very long, yeah, large.
Have problems with what? Because they're
having
uncomfortable?
Having girls who understand. Having a girl who, yeah, okay. who finding the girl with the right slipper, like a Cinderella.
Okay, this has taken a turn I wasn't expecting at the moment. Oh, Mark's making me stop eating the cake.
Doesn't sound good.
So they're coming down into London, are they?
Yeah, but unfortunately I don't think it's Channing Tatum himself. But
so there's a group of guys coming, like the Chippendales basically.
They're coming to make us come.
And are you gonna go and see
of
it?
Of course. I can't wait.
Would you marry a stripper? Would you marry a white person?
I don't know. This the Monty, we tried to talk about this on the podcast and like I was like, it depends. And she's like, that's not an answer. I suppose if I loved him, I think it would just be challenging because, you know, it depends if he, you know, what his thoughts on Islam were. I suppose if they were more like Boris Johnson. Then...
Okay, let's change the question. Okay. Would you marry Boris Johnson?
No.
What are you going to say in your interview tomorrow? You're doing an interview.
I haven't accepted it yet.
Oh, haven't you?
But my agent is at the Fringe, so I wanted to run it by him, but he hasn't answered. So I think I'll go on there. But what I said is what I said to you, which is basically that it's divisive. I don't want him to be the one to push my buttons or control how I feel or how, you know, it's been going on so long. It's getting silly now. And like, I probably would have been upset about it maybe a few years ago, but it's just like, it doesn't feel like it's coming from a real place. He just says these things, but I don't think that he cares about what he says or the people he's talking about. I don't think he knows us. What was the thing that he was writing? I didn't realize he'd said it in...
Do you know what? It's...
Sorry, it's my bad. I should have checked. But...
No, he wrote it in... Was it The Telegraph? It was an article about, I'm not sure what it's about. He said,
you know what? I think a Muslim girl.
Has Denmark banned it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then like some people are like, how are we behind Denmark? I just think a Muslim girl broke his heart or something.
Yeah. Why have Denmark banned it? They've just decided it's not the right thing, have they? We're all talking about stuff we don't know about here. So I suppose we should move away from it. You also said you're writing a script. Is that right?
I am.
What's the script? Can you tell? You can't tell us
it's
anything.
Every time I
ask anyone about anything, books or script, I can't tell you. Otherwise, the Wicked Witch of the West. What are you? What's it? What can you tell me?
It's about like a real Asian family.
Oh, sitcom then.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay.
It's
that's
gonna
good.
Be good. It's going to be really good, like, because it's real and it's not like made in the 70s, like some other, I can't name, but you know,
yeah.
So the guy's presenting GMB, so you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, it's going to be good, it's going to be real, it's going to be funny as well. Funny helps.
It certainly does help when you're doing a sitcom. All right, listen, there's some questions that we ask.
Okay.
Everyone who comes on our show, so I want to ask you that as well. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
There were so many, but so first of all, be careful of who you take advice from, because like, you know, it might not be the right thing for you or they might not have the right intentions, but I would just say follow your dreams, not somebody else's.
Mm. That is actually really true, because everyone's out there offering advice,
yeah.
But there's a lot of people I've realized as I've got older that actually like to see you in misery.
Yes, exactly.
And you should, this is a serious piece of advice for anyone out there, look around at people, and whenever you're feeling really down and someone turns up, it's not always because they're nice people.
No.
It can sometimes be because they're reveling in your misery. So yeah, that's actually a really good piece of advice there. Have you got any life hacks?
So sometimes I just do mental arithmetic for no reason. It might be because I'm Asian, I'm not sure. But I think that's good because I think it stimulates brain activity and helps to ward off dementia or like Alzheimer's. So just if you're
Yeah, that stuff
not,
does.
Yeah.
It's been proven, hasn't it?
Yeah. But well, I did it before it was proven.
Oh, right. Okay.
Trust me.
And also brush your teeth with the wrong hand.
Yeah. Oh, is that for the balance thing?
No, that's just... No, that just... Apparently your brain has to work overtime if you're...
Oh.
I'm right-handed, so if I brush it left-handed... I've done it so often now, but
oh.
I'm actually used to brushing my left hand, so I'm going to swap back to the right hand soon. So, yeah, good life hack. Are you good at maths?
I was. Me and maths have broken up.
Were you good at school?
I was a B student. That's not good for an Asian, but it's good for everybody else.
Is there real pressure then to be good at
school?
Well,
yeah. Yes. 100%.
Why?
Because it means a lot. Like, I think, you know, my parents came... Well, my mum was born here, but my dad came here. So it means a lot. It just says a lot about you, more than your character. It's like an achievement or what you're capable of and stuff. But it wasn't to me that much. But,
right.
Like, I suppose for them it was. So in that way, it meant... I was doing it for them, basically.
Okay.
I don't know. Maths is okay. I preferred English, you know, but they were like, I don't know. They didn't get how important English was or like reading books and enjoying stuff. So yeah, that was like, I really loved English Lit and English Lang. So
good. All right. Any books you recommend?
Mike Tyson's biography is really good.
Really?
Yes. You wouldn't think so. That's why.
I just think he's quite an amazing guy, but it all ended badly, didn't it, for him?
Yeah.
Well, he's still alive, but it all ended with him losing the plot a bit, and didn't he get a bit physical with Robin Givens? Is that her name? Who was it? Anyway, sorry. Was it her? I don't know. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
But what did you like so much about it?
Because I just thought it was erudite, and I didn't think that I would from him.
Did he talk about bringing up budgies and things? Didn't he have budgies or pigeons? Pigeons!
It was a while ago, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that one, and also like Harry Redknapp's biography is quite good as well.
Do you like biographies?
Yes.
Do you like football?
Do you like the reality TV of books? But no.
Do you like sport?
I like working out.
Do you? What do you do?
Strippers. I'm not stripping yet, but you know.
Do you like reality TV?
I did watch Love Island, but no, I hate reality TV.
Why?
Because it is really bad for you. Because I feel like it dumbs you down a little bit.
Would you do it?
I don't know.
I think you should. I think you should do it.
Yeah, but you know what? What I like when I get home is taking my headscarf off, and then I'd have to wear it like a lot.
In the jungle.
Yeah. But you know, I wouldn't say no. Those ones like Bear Grylls and stuff, that's proper like
adventure stuff. I think it'd be really important.
Oh, good.
I think you should do it. I think do one of them.
Maybe.
Strictly. Jungle.
Oh God, I can't dance. But Jungle, yeah.
Nor can a lot of them. I've watched it.
I know, but like, you know, I can bake.
You can bake.
I need to learn
bake
more
off.
Before. Yeah, I need to. Now I wouldn't do. I don't know. They'd think I'm somebody else that. Similar to Sadia,
yeah.
But you know.
She's done all right, hasn't she? She's lovely. She's like, the food's amazing. Okay, final question. What is the meaning of life?
Didn't know this one was going to be asked.
There you go.
I'm still finding it. What is the meaning of life? Being happy and not worrying. That's so shit, isn't it?
No, that's good.
But being happy and like, I don't know, like not getting upset about the small stuff. It's all cliches, isn't it? I'm really sorry. But it's like when you grow up, I think those kind of do... You know, it kind of rings true. Because when you're young and you hear all those things, don't waste your youth. That's what the meaning of life is.
Don't waste your youth. Yeah, that's kind of a good one, isn't it? What do you mean by wasting your youth? Wasting it doing...
Not realizing the value of why you're here.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know why you're here.
Why are you here? Got different ideas on
or
that.
Or just living, fulfill your potential, but have fun along the way.
Yeah, make sure you realize. I've got this new thought process that I can't stop thinking about, which is it doesn't matter how old you are. I'm 50. It matters how much longer you've got to go. That's all that matters.
It's never too late.
But if I've got 40 years left or 10 years left, it's a different. And I don't know how long I've got left, but you've got to kind of live for, not be hedonistic and live for now. But you've got to kind of. It's like that idea that you die with, you know, a couple of million quid in the bank where you could have spent it. You know, it's like, that's, what's the point in having that?
Simon Cowell have a watch which told you how long you have to live or if you're going to die and stuff?
Who did? Simon Cowell?
Yeah, I swear I heard that a while ago. How does he know? That's probably against Islam, so I can't have that watch. Could someone wear the watch for me or something?
That's probably Will I Am. He lives in the future. So when's the series 2 of the podcast coming out?
October.
Oh, so who have you got? Have you booked anyone for it yet?
We're on a holiday. We're trying to have more, shall I say, ordinary people, because we did have quite a few media people, but I think that it would be lovely to talk to, like, you know, people from all walks of life. So yeah, like a black pilot. Maybe he can show me his cockpit. I don't know.
Are you using this podcast just to find a partner? What's going to happen?
We were initially.
Yeah.
Either one. We either find out our belonging or we get laid. Either one. No, we don't ask for much.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
See you. Cheers.
Bye.
Sadia Azmat. We forgot to mention, by the way, I forgot to ask her if you want to follow her, where you can. And her Twitter address is at Sadia, Sadia _ Azmat, Azmats _. So that is if you want to follow her on Twitter. I got called an atheist. I was really shocked when I got called an atheist. It was a really funny moment.
But you me. Are?
Oh, yeah, I am, but it was just really funny. I've never
How is the atheist community?
I've never been called an atheist before. It was really strange. That really took me by surprise. It was really funny. Like, I'm something. I just don't have anything. And then suddenly I'm a...
Now you're I'm Richard a Dawkins.
Me and Richard Dawkins hanging out. I just thought it was really bizarre that I'm a something. All that time I've
been trying not to be a thing.
I've prided myself on not having anything, and I'm suddenly a thing, an atheist. It was quite weird, actually. It really took me by surprise, actually, having to discuss stuff that I feel, because it's been such a non-entity in my life that I need to think about it for more podcasts and the way I feel about life and the world. And I know lots about life and the world, but you know, how being an atheist as I am, what it actually means to be one. Anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed that. It was a great conversation. And the cake was really good as well. I really enjoyed it.
What was it? Courgette and...
Courgette.
And something...
Pistachio. It was really nice, yeah. And it was as the podcast went on, it got more and more appetizing sitting there looking at it. And then Mark stole it away from me.
Well, it was just getting... It was this noise.
Yeah.
It's quite unpleasant to listen to.
Yeah. By the way, if you are listening to this on a podcast, we did film it, so you can watch it on YouTube. We are still... we're still filming all these. They go out live on YouTube, and then we put them up later. So hopefully you can come and watch them. We're putting all the old ones up as well on YouTube. If you want to animate them for us, you can. We're not paying you any money. But if anyone fancies, finding a way to animate them or do something, you can do that for us if you want to. But anyway, all the footage is going up from them on YouTube. So you can do that. Just search for Dear Lovejoy Podcast. That's it from us. Anything else to add, Mark, to the...
Just that you managed to get another mention of Megan Hine in. That was good.
Yeah, Megan Hine's getting they think a restraining order against me.
She is.
He's brilliant. I tell you what, I buy that book. You'll love it. Megan Hine, Mind of a Survivor, is a very, very good book.
I tried to borrow it once, but Tim was holding it to his chest with both hands going, no, it's mine.
It's out on paperback now. Oh, okay. I tell you what I'm going to do, though. I gave it to Ronnie O'Sullivan, didn't I? And he promised me he'd tell me what he thought of it. I'm gonna tweet him soon and see if he's read it. And I'm going to ask Sadia if she's read it, because it's a good book to read. Anyway, that's it from us. You can let us know anything you want, basically, at Tim Lovejoy, or you can go on.
I was going to say, some more questions, problems, things like that.
Yes.
Because at the moment, we're just getting praise, which is very nice.
That's lovely, thank you. But yeah, do we want more? DearLovejoyPodcast@gmail.com. And I know that we had an email in the other day saying, stop apologising for everything, but I've got to apologise for the fact there was children screaming all over the
But how nice is it? It's about 10 degrees cooler than it was the last time we did this, and it is bliss.
Isn't it going to be brilliant doing this podcast?
I'm enjoying it again now.
In the winter. I can't wait
in a scarf.
You know, do you know what I hate? Is every time I tune in TV, everyone's going, oh God, thank God the weather's going. And I don't want to be one of those people, but thank God the heat is going. It's so hot. It's driving me mad. I was going delirious. That's it for this week's podcast. What did we give the email? I did just give the email.
Yeah, I interrupted it and you did it again.
All right. Dear Lovejoy Podcast at gmail.com.
Or Twitter.
Twitter at Tim Lovejoy. We'll see you all soon. Bye. Peace and love, Joy.
Bye.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.